Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion of the offense against the Steelers. Frustrating day in a lot of the ways. Brandon Croxton is here joining me, though, and that is the most fun about this discussion. Brandon, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good, Ken. You know, we're getting through this frustration together.
Yeah, there you go. There's a certain catharsis in the film that is really positive. I'll just say it is one of the things about this. The other thing that I've really enjoyed, and I want to make sure that she gets credit, Maureen has done an amazing amount of things for the content provided on this show, on you know, trying to open up new avenues for how we promote the show and whatnot. And she also spends all her time with me basically now in her retirement, sitting down and analyzing football. And we really enjoyed doing that with her. It makes the task much more manageable, that it's kind of a team effort. So we're having a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
So thank you, Maureen.
Yeah. It's great that you both can share that together. Yeah.
Isn't it? It really is. We're very lucky. So let's talk a little bit about the game Lamar Jackson had to start off with. Lamar did not have a great opportunity set to work with. And I know a lot of people think the offensive line is the devil incarnate for their failure to protect Lamar this year, or perhaps the offensive line coaching or Harbaugh for not stepping in and doing something. But he again did not get a really high quality set of opportunities. He got 11 ample time and space in this game, about 31%. He completed 7 of 11 for 95 yards, 8.6 yards per play. That's no problem with the ample time and space. He's basically right on target on this 11th. He should get 8.5. He got 8.6. Nine times he got the ball out quickly. Now, Rodgers got the ball out quickly 16 times in basically the same amount of attempts, but Lamar 9 times. He went 8 of 9 on those throws, and you should have a high percentage of completes there, for 97 yards and 10.8 yards per play. Those should average 6 each. So far, he's doing great through those first two categories. Yeah, then unfortunately, the biggest category is pressure. 15 times he was pressured, 43% of the time. He completed 4 of 13 passes under pressure for 11 net yards, which is only 0.7 yards per play. That includes 2 sacks and the turnover, the interception that Pierre had on the very poorly thrown ball as he was rolling right. Just an unbelievably bad performance under pressure here. He should get 3.5 yards per play, and he got 0.7.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, this is one of the things that Lamar is, it's coming up, it's showing itself is, you know, the injury. It looks like there's been a lot of indecisiveness. I think we really saw a lot of it in the first half of this game. He's indecisive whether to take off and run or whether to stay, you know, just create space so that he can get a pass off or give a receiver time to get open. He looks indecisive. And also his mechanics have been off. I don't know if it's, you know, him partly dealing with the injury, but he's not setting his feet. He's doing little hops when he's throwing. I mean, like the screen pass to Henry that would have gone for 20 yards or possibly even a touchdown, he like did a little hop when he was throwing the ball, and instead of just setting his feet and just flicking it over, and you know, it cost him, you know, cost a big play right there. And I don't think this is anything long term or big picture that, you know, we can necessarily draw from this, unless, you know, his mechanics have just gone to crap and he's never going to turn it around, which I highly doubt, because I mean, he's his biggest critic, and he works on, you know, those weaknesses in the offseason like no other person in the offseason. So I'm sure this will be corrected and it will be a lot better next year. Hopefully, you know, it's corrected for these next 4 games, but I think this is just part of what's manifesting itself.
Yeah, I think we'd much rather still he gets the Super Bowl MVP this year than a comeback player of the year next year.
Sure.
It's definitely, we don't want a comeback player of the year award as any kind of consolation. But Lamar is having a lot of mechanical difficulties. I think you've exactly hit it on the money. It's related to his concern. And by the way, the offensive line scoring system is highly protective of the cone that I use. I call things a lot of plays pressures that PFF doesn't score as pressures, because I say the quarterback has to have the ability to confidently step into his throw. It's a really important part of maintaining good mechanics. And Lamar just has not had that. And not nearly as much. And that's reflected in these relative pressure, amplitude, and space. I think the diagnosis is spot on in terms of why his mechanics are still a little off. And the other thing that you pointed to in this, which is not as much a mechanical issue as the decisiveness, I think he is having a lot of trouble deciding whether to run or extend. His natural desire is to extend because he thinks he can always, run later. And that's like a great poker player. Great poker players, they don't want to play a lot of pre-flop poker. Like you don't want to have to make the judgment based on what you can read pre-flop on whether your opponent has aces when you have kings. It's the most annoying thing. You want to minimize those kind of hands and those kind of risks. So you want to play your opponent after the flop, where you have more understanding of what's going on in the hand and a better chance to figure out what he's got. And that's Lamar. That's what Lamar is doing when he extends. He's just giving more times for things to break down in the story the defense is trying to tell him that he can then take advantage of. So I think the indecisiveness on running early. He hasn't had as many really long extended plays this year, for one thing, but part of it is probably that he's also concerned about his injuries and the need to either take off and take a short gain has been something has seemed more acceptable this year.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Lamar did run the offensive line out of three additional pressures, by the way. They're not even counted in that 15 pressure number. So I'm not going over the pass rush by numbers. I'll point you to the article if you want to see that. The offensive article is out there now. But the Steelers only averaged 4.6 rushers per play, which is not a lot. The Steelers normally a very high blitz team. They did use some 6- and 7-man rushes in this game, but it's only 5 of the plays in total. And conservative with numbers. They did not crowd the line of scrimmage, which meant the Ravens had all their misdirection options were open to them. They just couldn't capitalize on them in the red zone. Let's put it that way, because I think they did move the ball fairly effectively overall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. They left 2 plays on the field. We talked about the Henry, and we already talked about the Bateman drop in the first half as being 2 of the really pivotal plays in this game. The big play to Henry was big, and losing the drop on the Bateman play was enormous. And I'm not even talking about the likely touchdown. That was frustrating. Where does that rank for you relative to, say, a Lee Evans in terms of the culpability of the receiver?
I think Lee Evans is probably more of great play by the defense than just a drop by him. This likely play, I think, is probably, I don't know. I don't necessarily blame Likely for keeping his arms extended. I mean, he completed, I think he completed that. That was a completed pass. He was in the end zone. He got 2 feet down. He controlled the ball through those 2 feet, and he started to extend the ball. So if you look up in the rule book, you know, when a pass is in the end zone, you have to control the ball. You have to get 2 feet down and basically present control. So either you, and that control is taking a third step. It could be bringing the ball to your body, or it could be extending the ball away from another, you know, the defender. And that's considered a football move as well. While he's getting his 2 feet down, he's extending the ball away from the defender. So it's a catch. To me, it's a catch. And so I'm more upset about, you know, the referee, and the fact that it was called a touchdown on the field and then it got overturned.
And then reversed, yeah.
And I think it's, you know, like, I'll just say it's, you know, Supreme Court justice said one time, you know, I can't define porn, but I know it when I see it. I think we all saw that this was a catch, and yet, you know, the NFL can't define what a catch is for some reason. Yeah.
And I do remember hearing that quote before, but I don't know who that's attributed to, but it's obviously late 60s, early 70s kind of a
yes, it was a Supreme Court justice in the 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name, but yeah.
All right. So what do we want to talk about? Yeah. Oh, to respond to the likely thing, I think that the argument that the NFL made to Harbaugh supposedly on the phone was that because he had the ball already extended, he needed to extend the football for it to be the football move after the two steps had been taken. So it's two steps and then a football move, not two steps and a football move in some order. That's not the rule. So that's where the thing fell down. So
he had to go gadget arms to extend yes. that much further.
Yeah, exactly. So what a nightmare. I mean, obviously I want to talk about this as much as I want to talk about any number of other things that I don't want to talk about. All right. Anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about the offensive line a little bit. I just want to give a short synopsis here. Lamar was sacked twice, but he did also run the offensive line out of three pressures, which affected the scores. The offensive line had three penalties in this game. All three were declinable fouls, which is really bad. So that those cost extra points. But on the plus side, they played 75 offensive snaps, which is a lot of dilution for bad events. So from that perspective, they had an opportunity to make up some ground for some poor play.
Yeah. So how about we go to kind of individual performances here? What did you think about Ronnie Stanley at left tackle?
Okay, so start with Stanley. So he had a pretty good game in general of making his blocks, of getting out there, being mobile, of being physical with his guys, I thought. So that's from a qualitative standpoint. And I did have some trouble. He's opposite of Highsmith. I have him for 1.5 of the two sacks allowed. The very last play of the game, got straight up beat by Highsmith to the outside for a sack. There really is nobody else involved in that. It did look like who else was getting beat. Linderbaum was also getting beat on the play, but his getting beat didn't affect the sack. So the first pressure was on Stanley. He got the entire charge for that one. And the first sack, which was half on Fa'alele, that ended the second drive with a sack minus 8. Fa'alele did the more heinous thing. He kind of gave up on his block of Eccles. But the rest of that was Stanley again getting beaten by Highsmith. I'm sorry, not true. He was bulled into Lamar by Hayward on that play. So that was a play where the pocket was phone booth. And I would find some way to divide that out. In that case, the pressure from Eccles came second. So it really was appropriate, I thought, to split the sack even up. And that's the way I did it. So anyway, he had two half pressures he also allowed. He also had a ineligible downfield flag where I thought Highsmith actually kind of threw him down the field. And maybe, as a defensive lineman, was that ever part of the game plan to throw an offensive lineman into level two if you could get it done?
Yeah, I can't figure out exactly what he was trying to do there, because it looked like he really just took a bad angle, and it was Hightower that came off the edge and basically kind of cut him off and made Stanley go downfield like 2 yards and then work his way back as opposed to just going straight down the line. So it looked like more. Like, I don't know if it was intentional by what Hightower did or not, but I mean, Stanley just took an awful angle that he went down the field to work his way back to try and make a block. It was just, it was just a messed up play.
I think Highsmith got his hands on him and actually threw him down the field more or less. And normally you're allowed 1 yard from the line of scrimmage if you're in contact with the opponent. That's at least my understanding of the rule. And sometimes even officiate is more than that. But then he lost contact with the people. And apparently, I don't know, I haven't read the IDP rule in a while, but the flag gets thrown at that point. There's no picking it up. There's no, he got back onside kind of thing. Like with an offside penalty, you can get back onside as long as the offense doesn't move. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like that for IDP, and the flag was thrown. And then that's a declinable foul. And as it turned out, they had a throw for minus 1. So they deemed that foul had the option to decline had value. And I'll point out again, this is something that costs an extra point in the penalty system because of that. So anyway, for the game, Stanley scored 53 points, 0.71 per play. I gave him close to the maximum adjustment, about 2 points off it, which got him up to 0.79 for a C+, because Highsmith is a very tough opponent. And, you know, the Pittsburgh pass rush is good. One of the things that I could have marked him down by another point or two for, which would have taken him down to a flat C, would have been the fact that he got a fair amount of help. But if I look at all the sets and chip blocks they had 35 total sets and chips, 17 set and 18 chips. Those were distributed 7 to the left side, 7 between the tackles, and 21 to the right. So they were hyper-focused on Watt in terms of where they delivered chip blocks. So some of it is formation related. I understand that oftentimes it's a 3-by-1 formation. You only have an X receiver on that side. X receiver ain't making a chip block, so you really don't have an eligible receiver to make a block there. You still could have a running back that goes on that side. But all the focus was on putting additional chips on Watt. I think they did a pretty good job on him, at least on him not getting multiple knockdowns of Lamar. He did get one, but he didn't get any sacks, and he didn't get any other quarterback hits than the one. Mm-hmm. So anyway, C+ for Ronnie.
Okay. How about Voorhees?
Voorhees had a pretty reasonable game. I mean, I know everybody's beaten on Voorhees right now, and he hasn't been perfect by any stretch in the season, but he's actually trending up right now, and I think Falele is trending down in terms of their play. So Voorhees had 75 plays, made 64 blocks. Now he missed 9, led the team in missed blocks. And there were some ugly looking misses amongst those. And we had this out in the article, so I'm going to refer you to that. I believe it might've been 7 of 9 misses were losses at the line of scrimmage, which that's bad, because those losses, if the play had gone on for longer, they might've turned into pressure events, or they might've turned into penetrations if they're on run plays. So anyway, that is quite bad, but, he only gave up half a pressure and a third of a quarterback hit in terms of actual events. And then the big one he had was the offensive holding call. And that came at an incredibly inopportune time to set the Ravens back to what, the 17-yard line after they started at the 27 on that final drive. So terrible, terrible time. And it's understandable why fans would be so upset with him. Anyway, 0.76 was his points per play. I adjusted that by 0.04. I think the one thing to be forgiving about is he's opposite Connor Hayward, not Connor Hayward,
Cameron Hayward
for most of that game. And that's a very tough matchup for him. He did get run out of one pressure by Lamar. So I gave him a C for the game after a 0.04 adjustment, which is the maximum I could bring myself to do. He did have 4 blocks in level 2, and he had 6 out of 7 pulls. And he would have needed to have his grade change anything from that. He would have needed several more points. So it wouldn't have been anything that would have been reasonable to give him, even facing Hayward. So 6 out of 7 pulls, though, that's one of the areas he's been doing pretty well in, is he's been effectively pulling these last few weeks.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's move on down to Linderbaum.
Okay. Linderbaum, another tough game as a pass blocker, as I scored it. And if you go out to PFF, you're going to see a different story. And I can explain some of the reason why that's true. I have him for 3.5 pressures and a quarter of a quarterback hit. They don't have him for a quarterback hit, but they probably wouldn't, because they would have given it to either Falele or maybe to Rosengarten on the play. But he was partially culpable for what was effectively a jailbreak pressure, where the pocket got extremely phone boothed, and he was responsible for a quarter of that. They had a free runner and then a quarter to each of the guys who were on the right side of that line. He allowed a pass to be knocked down at the line of scrimmage, actually knocked up in a very dangerous manner by Benton, that was up in the air, and the ball was at risk. That's a pressure, as I call it. He got backed up a little bit. I don't think that's a pressure as PFF scores it. And then he had others where players got in the cone, and it made things tough for Lamar. And I am highly protective of the cone, and the center has a responsibility there to you know, handle his block. And that's just not something Linderbaum has been great at. He was really good as a run blocker in this game. So he missed 4 blocks. He had 8 blocks in level 2. He had 1 pancake, made both of his pulls, had 2 nice highlight combination blocks. But in addition to the 3.5 pressures that he had and the one quarter of a quarterback hits, that's 5 total events. he had another pressure that Lamar ran him out of in the game. And it's a frustrating day as a pass blocker for Linderbaum. And I looked at the PFF score and I'm like, I just don't agree with that. And my method is different. And let's take a second here. I really respect what PFF does. I respect the fact that I can look at their numbers and with my own mental adjustments can look at them and compare linemen across the league. In particular, when I talk about mental adjustments, I'm not looking at the combined score. And I can appreciate what they do. But it would be completely useless if I had the exact same scoring methodology as PFF and we're trying to duplicate what they did. I've got to have a different methodology that tells us what's different about these models and why, you know, you might want to look at it this way or you might want to look at it this way, but you have both available to you in terms of what the differences are. And that should give some insight into what's going on and how things are different. So anyway, I didn't have him, Linderbaum, with a good pass blocking game in this one at all and a C overall.
Okay. Let's go to Baltimore's favorite offensive lineman, Daniel Falele.
There you go. Eight more missed blocks in this game. It was a mix of some pass blocking errors and some run blocking errors, but he also had five other pressure events which he contributed to. That's very high for Falele. That's his season high, tied with last week. So you can see why a lot of people are. Probably the din is getting louder for Falele, and he does deserve it in terms of this being he's played worse than he has before as a pass blocker. You can still see him being oafish as a run blocker. The actual fact of the matter is he's looked a lot better as a run blocker these last 2 weeks. Looked a lot better as a run blocker. But of course, that's the less important of the two things.
Yeah.
You know, you need him to be exactly a pass blocker. And you know, these five things. He had 1.5 pressures, 1.25 quarterback hits, 1.5 of one of the sacks. 0.70 per play, which is not good at guard, adjusted by 0.04. He had some really nice, what are mostly run blocking numbers. I'll tell you, 5 level 2 blocks. Those are all on runs, I believe. I believe he did not have one on a screen pass. So I believe those are all run blocks. He had 4 pancakes on the game. Really nice to see him get physical and finish some blocks.
Yeah, that's what you would always love to see from a guy his size, is to just get that mean streak and just put guys on their butt.
Yep.
I mean, you such a size advantage and strength advantage.
Why do you think Daniel has a problem finishing a block? If you've got contact, go to the echo of the whistle, push the guy to the ground. Why do you think he has a problem doing that personally?
Some guys have that mentality. Some guys don't. I mean, it's just kind of how it is. Like, you think back, Michael Orr had that as a rookie at right tackle. Who was the redheaded center? Ryan Jensen. He had that fireball. Like, I mean, if Ryan Jensen had Falele size, he'd probably be banned out of the NFL the way he would just
that's true.
Pull people out of the, you know, in that mentality. And some guys don't. I mean, it's just how people are built, you know. They're just built different.
All right, so anyway, a D for Falele in the game. 4 pancakes. He made 3 out of 3 pulls. He's on a real hot streak now in terms of pulls himself. I think last week he might have made all 5. So this has been one of the really things that you just couldn't count on Falele. And I'm like, they can't keep asking him of this, particularly on pass plays where he has to kind of reset the pocket on the other side of the center. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. But this game, you know, he made all 3, and I think it was last week that he made all 5. So he's on a good streak with those. Had 4 highlight blocks. You want to see some great blocking? Watch the first drive of the game. In fact, the first 5 plays offensively for the Ravens. The Ravens had a gain of 7 on the second play. Falele, they made a really nice combo block of Benton and then Queen in level 2. I know Queen's an easy target here, so his name is going to come up from time to time. Third play of the game, he drives Yaya Black 10 yards back into level 2, and then he also picked up Queen on the back end of that snowplow. So he's basically drove Yaya Black into Queen 10 yards downfield and is taking 2 guys. Great play on the third play. You go to the 5th play of the game. It's a 31-yard pass here. I think this one was to Flowers on the right sideline eventually. So he's pass blocking. But he picked up the stunting Queen, drove him into Peyton Wilson. So he got another 2-for-1 and pancaked both of them on the play. So, I mean, you know, all the talk about him not being, and by the way, that was only 1 pancake. I didn't count that as 2 pancakes towards his 5 or towards his 4, if you're wondering. Mm-hmm. But anyway, very, very effective first 5 plays of the game. And just, try and be balanced in your view of LA Lakers.
Where's all of this on Twitter? Because you see, you see the plays where he messes up plenty, but you play where he pancakes two people. I mean, that's a highlight for any offensive lineman. That's super rare.
I mean, honestly, with the amount of rage bait you get from this, I should probably be trying for the engagement by you know, tossing out videos of
Look at this play. Yeah.
Oh, really? If online is not physical enough for you, what does this mean? Look at this. Where are your examples?
Like I always say, you could make Patrick Mahomes look like Christian Ponder if you take his three worst plays. And if you took Christian Ponder's three best plays, you could make him look like Patrick Mahomes. So,
All right. So, Rosengarten, the final one we haven't gone through. Yep. Let me do that quickly because I know we're running behind here. So, he had a good day. He's facing Watt. He did have a lot of help in this game. It's very reminiscent of the 2024 season in a lot of ways and a lot of the help he got. But 1.5 pressures, two-thirds plus one-quarter of a quarterback hit. I give it to you that way because if I said 11/12 of a quarterback hit is what he had for the game, people would look at me like I had three heads, but it's two-thirds plus a quarter is what he had. And then he had an illegal formation penalty where he was off the line of scrimmage. They actually called it on Ronnie Stanley in the game book. They noted on the I think Tony Romo said on the game that they had it on the wrong player. But anyway, exactly a 0.75. I gave him a 0.07 adjustment. I was thinking about 0.09 versus Watt originally, but then I knocked it down by two factors. One is he gave up a pressure that Lamar ran him out of, and he also had all that help with 21 of the eligible receiver blocks on the right side. So a lot of that is directed right at Watt. There were some others that wasn't Watt that was like picking up defenders that were free run, would have otherwise been free runners on the right side, or you know, the slot corners blitzing or whatever it might be. But a lot of it was directed at TJ Watt. Gotcha. So anyway, he gets a B for the game and was the best of the Ravens linemen as I scored it.
Okay.
Well, look, four plays, two blocks. Nothing much to report other than that.
Yeah, he was extra lineman on, I think, that's a couple of plays. Yeah,
we had the question come up a number of times: is why didn't Emory Jones see action after playing 15 scored snaps against Cincinnati? He actually played 16 we had an offensive holding flag as well. That was a pretty severe error in that game. We heard John Harbaugh say he didn't outplay the starters versus Cincinnati. I think that's definitely true, by the way, because I score that offensive hold as being a pretty severe error. But, you know, are we a little surprised we didn't see some rotation from Jones in this game?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised, but I guess you want to see a little bit about what you have for him for next year. But, I mean, you know, considering you could be looking at potentially three new starters next year on the interior if – and probably more likely at least two of them. Right. So I think you want to get him more times. And I think it's the Steelers, it's Tomlin. You don't really play around with rookies and rotations. I think sometimes you just got to go with, you know, the guys that you can trust the most. And it's sometimes hard to trust a rookie who's only, you know, been practicing, you know, maybe what, five, 6 weeks now at this point. So yeah, go with the veteran experience more.
I want to talk about some of the individual players, of course, but what would be your solution for the offensive line next year in terms of who you would keep? What would be your strategy with all five positions? Give me that.
Sure. So, I mean, you have no choice but to bring back Stanley at his price. And I think, you know, he hasn't been as good as last year. If he can maintain kind of what he is this year, which I'd say is probably what, an above average left tackle. I mean, certainly not Pro Bowl level or close to that level, but I'd say at least an above average left tackle, I would definitely consider keeping him. I mean, as far as Voorhees, I mean, he's definitely going to be back next year. I don't necessarily think you give him just a, you know, a no-brainer starting position. I think I would like to see, you know, some competition, whether that's Emory Jones or maybe another veteran, something like that. Go ahead.
I want to say in case of Stanley, you hit on above average. He's 28 out of 62 in the PFF grading. I think they've honestly, they're a little more generous with him than I would be. I think he gives more cone intrusive pressures. But that being said, I mean, Lamar has been good with that throughout his career. So I think, I don't think you have another option but hope, because you've already spent that money. His next year's salary is effectively guaranteed. And you have an option after the 26 season to get out of his last year of his deal for $16 million. And I'm sorry, I cut you off as you were talking about what you do with Voorhees there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you probably bring in some competition. I mean, I think it's the competition will probably be between Voorhees and Jones for that starting left guard position. I think you're probably, at this point, you probably have to let Linderbaum go. I think the first round pedigree and what it's either two or three Pro Bowls at this point. I mean, he's regressed from that Pro Bowl level. He's still an above average. He's probably close to, if not maybe a top 10 center in the league. But somebody at this point, somebody's going to pay him to be the highest paid center in the league. And I just hope it's not going to be us that does it.
Right. I'm out of that musical chair as well. I think that we can let somebody else have it. But it does mean that they're going to have to use probably their second or third round pick on a center to try and get that completed. They won't use their one. They won't make that mistake again. But they could well use their second round pick. If they got a Zach Frazier out of the deal, no problem. I mean, he's a fine young player, but they won't necessarily be that fortunate. And there have been a lot of first round whiffs at center in recent years. Garrett Bradbury took a long time for him to develop. Billy Price, the guy Cincinnati drafted a few years ago, is a complete bust. Mm-hmm. So you know, there've been some troubles certainly at center as it's gone. So right guard, you mentioned Emory Jones at left guard. Emory Jones is a longer player, nice long arms. You know, that's one of the reasons why some people think he can still play tackle. That's more, you know, closer to what you might expect out of a right guard.
Yeah. Either way, you know, I would like to see them sign a solid veteran, whether that be at center or one of the guard, to play either one of those guard positions. Okay. I think maybe you bring in a veteran, you know, let's say under, you know, 10 million a year or less, something like that, to play, you know, to be that center or a guard. And yeah, and the other position you draft at the, you know, second or third round. I'd like, personally, I think we've had a lot more success finding mid-round guards than we have centers. I'm not sure if that's entirely accurate, but
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
If weight management is one of your New Year goals, Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 Amplifier can help. This science-backed formula supports metabolic balance, curbs cravings, and promotes healthy blood sugar levels, making it easier to stay consistent and in control. It helps give your body the boost it needs to keep you on track. Feel confident and energized this year with Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 Amplifier. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I think preferably for me is let Linderbaum walk, sign a solid veteran that can give you, 80% of what Linderbaum does, and draft a guard in one of the middle rounds.
Okay, so if I'm looking at a 9-man offensive line for 2026, as you've described, because I know you're keeping Rosengarten, we don't even need to talk about that, right?
Yeah.
So you've got your three guys who are committed tackles would be Stanley, Rosengarten, and Vincent.
Yep.
You have as your next guy, and Jones would be the guy that you would have as your extra secret double secret reserve tackle then. So then you've got a veteran you're bringing in for $10 million or less on the inside, but somebody who can play, and that guy may be tough to find, but maybe there's a Kevin Zeitler out there, end of his career, you're signing him for 1 year. Baltimore's a great place for him for hopefully for Super Bowl reasons, as ridiculous as it sounds to be saying that right now. Sure. Then you're spending a second round pick potentially at center, but you're maybe agnostic to whether that's at center or guard.
Yeah. So, basically, your combination is it's either find a veteran center that's going to be a solid starter and then draft a guard in the second round, or maybe it's finding that veteran guard and drafting a center in the second or third round. But yeah, you need to have, I think, some kind of veteran presence at least one of the positions, and finding a young guy that's got starting potential at the other.
Okay. I'm with you all the way. We're keeping Corey Bullock as center two.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Yeah. And Voorhees, then he'll compete, but he's not guaranteed the left guard job, but he might win it.
Right. Okay. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. And then Jones is the fifth guard. That still is only eight. So are you taking a developmental draft pick additionally, a guy fifth or sixth round?
You absolutely have to draft two offensive linemen this draft. Yeah.
All right. And that still only gives you nine. I'm usually of the opinion you really want to start with 10. So when you get through training camp, you have nine. Mm-hmm. And then you have another guy in the practice squad. This year, they've been walking a tightrope with Jared Penning on their practice squad. And I mean, they started the year with Nick Samak being one of their top squad guys. I had hoped they'd get Dellinger back. They didn't. Obviously, he moved on. And but there are guys like that available. And to me, the most important thing about the change for 26 is going to be getting an offensive line coach that we can really trust to get the Ravens way of development. You know, find that new Cal Ripken senior for the organization who makes your whole organization better by teaching the Oriole way.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think I can't think of the offensive lineman's coach's name, but I think this is probably Warhop. This is probably Warhop's last season. And you got to find whoever that top offensive line coach is, whether it's, you know, potentially a guy that's on an NFL staff right now that the staff gets fired, but he's still, you know, one of the better offensive line coach, or find a really good one in the college ranks.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with you. And your later round pick, are you agnostic on guard or tackle? I think I am, because you can find a swing guy.
A guy that could play guard or tackle. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I love it. Sign me up for that plan. We'll call that the Brandon plan and move on from there.
Sure.
All right, Brandon, let's talk some skill position players, and why don't you lead us off here?
Sure. Talk a little bit about Derrick Henry. I think he's been solid all year. You know, he's plotting and moving a lot of piles and not getting a lot of opportunities to, you know, bust out those big runs, but he's been really solid at moving the pile. And when the offensive line is maybe blocking for 1 yard, he's still managing to get two or three additional yards to, you know, get you in second and six when it could easily be a second and nine, something like that. So, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, Lamar will be, you know, more of a running threat, and that they'll respect the read option more to give him more openings. But, you know, in this game, I thought, you know, he really gave a solid presence and was able to move the pile and, you know, keep us in, you know, advantageous, you know, keep us ahead of the chains most of the game.
Derrick Henry will be with the team in 26 for sure, because they paid him a lot of the money, and they frankly have a lot of dead cap when he leaves this team. His contract is very much set up in the Odell Beckham manner that he'll have a lot of trailing money through void years. But difference is we've seen the return on Derrick Henry. So we're not going to, hopefully won't be as resentful of those dollars as we are that Odell Beckham money that's still in the contract this year, for example, for the sold the cap. But I think Henry probably is a good bet to bounce back next year, despite the fact that I think a lot of the regression that has occurred was very predictable. It was predictable, certainly on the basis that he's a year older and he's coming off the greatest season of the 20th century by any running back, if you believe the DVOA number. Mm-hmm. So in terms of him regressing from that, you know, a sizable amount of regression should have been expected just from that. But then Lamar also had an injury plagued year, which has taken away all the misdirection of the offense. So the reduction in his value from that, while it shouldn't have been anticipated at the beginning of the year, it should have been anticipated in his play, given what's happened to Lamar. And I don't think he's been utterly terrible, but I do think just some of this actually just goes back to him not being the tackle breaker he was at one point. He's have a career low for missed tackles forced per attempt. And he's getting hit more closer to the line of scrimmage than he was before. So it means he's getting hit by more linemen and less safeties for the first contact, mm-hmm. but that's not enough of an excuse, because previously in his career, you know, when he's had 0.20 or 0.21 missed tackles per attempt, his yards per before contact were even worse in terms of what went on. So I don't think there's a fair amount of regression, I'm afraid, that's due to age, and just a limitation of his own physical qualities. And he's Nolan Ryan of running backs. He's the guy who is always the incredible physical specimen, you know, still able to perform in his 30s, like a lot of running backs are at 24 and not at 28. And that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know we talked a little bit about it before. I think you still have to draft a running back this coming year, but he's been solid. I expect him to continue to be, you know, really solid next year as well.
All right, let's talk about Keaton Mitchell a little bit, since we're just on the running back form. So he's a guy that I want to see more of, obviously, but we just got the run out of Keaton Mitchell, the signature run. I'm afraid on what might be his last carry of the year. We'll see if that ends up being true. If the Ravens were to go and lose to Cincinnati, I think it there's a much higher probability that Keaton is done for the year, that they'll shut him down and not try and bring him back for the final games, because they'd have to make up two games then in Pittsburgh. And I don't see that. Or they'd have to hope Pittsburgh loses to the Browns, which might happen, but it's a lot less likely. So it becomes a real question as to whether you want to risk his 2026 season. Since the Ravens don't own his rights yet for 2026, that's not the same. It can't be the same kind of concern it might otherwise be. But the only possibility they have to get value for him is if they sign him. If they don't sign him, or they don't tender him, either one of those two things, they won't get a draft pick for him. They would need to actually use the high round tender, which will cost them several million, maybe $4 or $5 million for the second round tender to get value for.
Right. And yeah, there's nobody that would sign him. Or
right.
Like I think it's probably the chances of getting signed if at a low tender is pretty low at this point, but I think it's possible.
So if there should be divisible benefit here, that means they should be able to go to Mitchell and say, hey, 1 year, $3 million. And then, you know what? You'll be a 4 year veteran with the Ravens at that point. Ricard, there's probably certainly a better than 50% chance that he's not with the Ravens after the 26th season. And you could become our guy there as kind of a backstop, because we'd be offering you $2.5 million, including a VSB payment in 27. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if he stays with the Ravens in 26 for $3 million, whatever, then, you know, he could be in a position where his, you know, he still has a primary kickoff return responsibility. He's a valuable explosive running back, but never a guy who's going to get a ton of carries as that number two.
Right. Yeah. Also like that, they had, Mitchell and Henry in on a couple of plays in the game. They had a pony backfield. Yeah. And yeah, like I would have liked to see that more, you know, earlier in the season, especially, you know, if with Lamar is not the, you know, hasn't been the runner that he normally is, you could use Mitchell as the misdirection for that, because I mean, he draws attention, and you know, just like Harbaugh says, he he's getting the ball as soon as he gets on the field, so why not use that to your advantage.
You know, it's an interesting thing, because obviously everybody knows Henry's getting the ball. Let me give it to you. So Henry was carried or targeted the football on 27 of 43 snaps. So right there, that's 60% roughly.
Yeah, might be a little tough.
Yeah. So Ali, 4 of 27. So you're worried about Ali. Ali's a designated pass blocker. More than half his blocks are as a pass blocker. Mm-hmm. He runs a few patterns. He's in there on some running plays. Lamar runs the ball sometimes when he's in. And then you have Mitchell, 6 of 12. So he's at about 50%. So it's somewhat true of Mitchell. It's most true of Henry that you know that he's getting the football if he's in the game.
Right. Yeah.
It didn't make any sense when he said it. And you know, a lot of things. There's multiple elements of things that I think people are finding extremely distasteful in Harbaugh's communication style this year. I don't really have a problem with it, because I'm always reading between the lines in terms of what he says. The first is any kind of coach speak about players, and he's doing it pretty much game after game about the offensive line. People are stomping up and down saying, no, you're not seeing. I saw all these clips of Falele, or I saw this, or I saw that. I've got eyes. Don't tell me what this player is doing. Mm-hmm. Don't even listen to him. Don't even listen to what he's saying when he's talking about a player, because the only time he really means it is when he's completely over the top with his descriptive elements about the player. It's the only time. So just ignore it. The other thing is injuries. Just ignore it. Don't even. I mean, first of all, he shouldn't even be talking about it. So that's where we should stop. It's like, sorry, injuries. Ask me the question as if you're Jeff Zrebeck about, is Lamar Jackson going to play this week? And you know, his answer ought to be, you know, Jeff, as you know, our stance on injuries is no comment, and that's our only comment. And if you say that to a reporter like a Jeff Standing, then you know the other people are going to finally, even Jerry Coleman, will eventually get the message that you can't ask questions about injuries.
Yeah. And I think if you do that for every injury, whether it's a serious one or a minor one, you give more, it becomes an advantage for you for whatever your opponents, because you don't know exactly who's playing and who's not. I mean, he said, Keaton Mitchell isn't long-term, he's day-to-day. So, it's good to hear that he's not long-term, that it's not serious. So, but if you give no information and you just have him, have the opponent read between the lines on the injury report on whether he's practicing or not, you really have no idea whether he's going to play.
And you just can't be one-sided in giving out positive information. And I think that's the problem. That's a problem what I would describe as a weakness in Harbaugh's communication style. Is he wants people to like him too much, and he's too friendly and too giving of information to the media that really should be in the private domain. This is drilled into you in M&A work, is that you cannot talk about these kind of things. Your only comment is no comment. You cannot say whether a merger is going to happen. You can't say if company A is going to buy company B. And if you do, or if anybody trades on it because of something you said, you're guilty of insider trading. So, just why on earth in this world with all the gambling going on football, as a sidelight to this, why would you do anything to risk yourself in this?
I mean, Bill Belichick was a pro at this, and he would even joke. I remember one time he said, yeah, and to whatever, yeah, Bob, Bob the reporter, yeah, I'm looking forward to giving you that injury report right away as soon as this, completely joking, like, yeah, you're not getting any information on that. So yeah. But going on, let's talk about Zay Flowers a little bit. I think he had really nice game. I really like that he got targeted down the field more than we've seen the last few games. And, he's been able to make he was able to make some big plays as well.
Yeah, it's good game where they got him between level two and level three a number of times, and they got him. Did they get him really over the defense on any play, or was it basically
I think the closest one was that one where he snuck up the sideline on the cover two, and then it was right in front of the safety, but it was the long play down the sideline where he outran Ramsey to the sideline. It was like a 40 or 50 yard play, something like that.
Okay, he had the 31 where he stepped on the sideline, I think, where he kind of tapped his feet in. Maybe I'm wrong. I've had a lot of plays missed up from this game, so I don't think I want to push any chips into the pot on that. Sure. But he had a great game, and he had a really terrible game last week. He had seven targets for 6 yards, I believe, last week. So coming back with 11 for 124 is a very big game. The Ravens are going to need, down the stretch and definitely into next year, they're going to need more yards per target out of the receivers. It's been a very tough year for the tight end, so I'll move on and talk about the combination of Likely and Andrews, who had a very tough game in this one. And Likely, he caught the touchdown pass, and he looked like he was catching a second touchdown pass. But for the game, he had 6 targets for 25 yards. That's not going to get it done. Andrews had 5 targets for 9 yards. So between them, 11 for 34 is barely 3 yards a carry, 3.1, I guess, 3 yards per target. That doesn't get it done, obviously. And it's the biggest part of the offense that's not working this year is the tight end room. Kolar did have a big catch on the final drive for about 17 or 19 yards, whatever it was. But so. Yeah, but I was bothered obviously by the fact that all these tight end contracts were stacked up and they're going to lose all the guys at the same time. And that included Ricard, included the big three at tight end too. And now I probably would still rather have Likely at some number that I could pick. I'd still rather have Andrews than not at some number lower than what he signed for. But I'm not that excited about the three of them to any great degree. I might rather have Kolar at kind of a Nick Boyle number than either of the other two guys, and then take our chances with a couple of receiving tight end draft picks. Or a vet and a draft pick.
Sure. Like, I was disappointed as well that Likely was not the one that got the extension and that Andrews did. I think it Likely, you know, obviously he's younger. I think he's probably a little bit bigger, a bigger play threat, even though Andrews is probably a little bit more consistent, you know, kind of overall. I think both of them have been hurt by the fact that Lamar has not been, you know, able to extend those plays, because both of them, they really make their big plays when Lamar's extending a play and then he finds them, you know, for down the field for, you know, 20, 30 yards or whatever. You know, so, but yeah, like I would have hated to see both Andrews and Likely walk at the end of the year. So I am glad that they at least got one of them signed. I thought that, you know, $12 million a year for Likely at this point, for Andrews is probably a little bit rich, but I don't think you could go from, you know, you could argue the two of them are two of the top 10 tight ends in the league. I don't think you can go from having two to having zero. And they were, you know, legitimately, you know, staring that in this offseason. So at least they got one. I think is fine. Yeah. I agree. I don't love that contract either. And I wish it was Likely. And yeah. If you bring back Kolar at a reasonable number, maybe you don't double dip in the draft. But I think if Andrews is the only one coming back, then I think you definitely have to double dip in the draft.
Right. So Kolar would be the vet you could bring back, because effectively now he's gone. And the nice thing about signing him is you don't lose a compensatory draft pick for him if you sign him. He doesn't cost you anything because he's one of your own players. Now, you don't also get an offset in the compensatory formula, but it's more important to be able to sign your guys that you want, because you potentially can have to go a round up to get the offset if you sign somebody from the outside. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. I think that's my pick. So any other players you'd like to talk about here?
Let's talk a little bit about Bateman. He got in the offense. He got in the offense a little bit more than he has these last few games. He caught a couple of first down plays. You know, he had the unfortunate drop, but you know, he was targeted for what should have been at least a third first down, if not a possible touchdown. So it was good to see him get a little bit more involved in the offense, and hopefully, you know, this is a step forward to get him even more involved.
So we're talking about a step forward to get him three targets in the game. And I don't deny that is a step forward for Bateman, but this is where the offense has really come up short. Bateman was a great extended play receiver last year, like the tight ends. And he had, you know, this is not to be forgotten. Rashad Bateman had the highest ever in Ravens history yards per target for any wide receiver. You know, at 10 and a half yards per target. The only guy who'd ever had more in a season by any Raven was Mark Andrews as a rookie. And it boggles the mind how far the drop off has been. I know a lot of people had projected a lot more aggregate production from him because he'd been so effective in terms of touchdown percentage last year and yards per target last year. Targets are very hard to find in this offense. They're very, very hard to come by. And I think we're seeing just how, you know, parsimoniously they're handed out, you know, but the eyedropper effectively, you know, when the offense is really humming. First of all, you run the ball a lot more. Second of all, you know, everybody should be getting the football on extended plays, and Lamar might take off and turn a pass play into a run play at any time. So everybody loses touches effectively to the way Lamar runs the offense when it's fully oiled up.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
All right, I got one more guy I want to talk about, and then we'll hit you up one more time. We'll see, but NS Walker, Tez Walker, last week. I mean, he's inactive for this game. Wallace was active. Wallace played three snaps. Wester played five, by the way, on offense. So they only got eight snaps out of their two special teams aces in the game. Wallace had played a lot more, by the way, earlier this year. Certainly in 24 down the stretch, he played a lot and made big run blocking contributions that were significant. For him to be inactive for Walker was a big move, but I was a little surprised they didn't make it in this game against the Steelers. He had really stretched the Bengals defense in a way that got him two outstanding downfield opportunities. Lamar missed him both times, threw a bullet to him high after Geno Stone, I think, had fallen down on the coverage.
Yep.
And then the second time, Dax Hill was on him. There was no match for him speed-wise. There's really no corner in the league who's going to be a match for Tez Walker speed-wise. But he took him right down the numbers, basically. Lamar had about an eight-yard window to throw him open, just have Walker run under that ball for an easy six. He came up way short on the throw. Walker still caught the ball, but before he could complete the act of the catch in Aaron Rodgers-esque fashion, he had it pried loose on the ground by Dax Hill.
Yeah, that's one of the things I disagree with. You know, I think you need to keep him active. I think you need to get him snaps. He's a deep threat. You know, even if he's just running off receivers to take away defenders for you to throw underneath, he's a threat out there, and you got to have your weapons. And you know, he's shown the ability to go out and make a play, make a touchdown, you know, make a big play here and there. It was unfortunate that, you know, he wasn't able to hold on to that ball. I think, even though it was overthrown, I think you could reasonably say, you know, he could have or should have held on to it last week.
We're talking about the laser that Lamar threw that was high.
Loft one that was okay. Underthrown. You know, I think you could make the argument that he should have held on to it, even though, but I mean, it was a tough play. But I still think you still got to get him out there and give him opportunities. He's shown the ability to, you know, make a play. So even if you just chalk up last week as just a bad week, if you consider it that, then get him out there and make a play. I mean, you know, I don't know if they targeted Wallace at all. I don't remember, you know, and so why not get a guy that's going to, you know, people are going to, you know, you're going to have the defense keeping an eye on because of that speed.
So next year, Walker honestly should fall. He should step into whatever role Hopkins. Yeah. Had this year. And, they could bring DeAndre Hopkins back on a somewhat similar contract. They could do the same thing again. I wouldn't really object to that given his, you know, productivity on a per target basis, but he hasn't really had enough of an impact on the offense to get excited about that, where I think Walker could legitimately outperform Hopkins.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he should they should definitely look at it. I wouldn't be upset if they brought Hopkins back, but I think you need to carve out a role for Walker on this team, whether he's back or not, whether that's a three or four. I mean, you know, Hopkins, his snap count seems to, you know, it seems to be relatively low. Like, or, you know, I'm not exactly sure, but you see him off the field a lot I just think, yeah, like you should be able to at least get, Walker out there on the field.
Yeah, I was going to look up what Hopkins' snap totals have been per game, because he played a few more in some of these games. Yeah, he had 42 snaps against Cleveland, 34 against the Jets, 23 against Cincinnati, and then just 13 here against Pittsburgh. And before that, the whole season, he topped out at 26 with a low of 10. So, he's not playing half the snaps or anything for this team for the season. It's certainly a guy who it's an appropriate role. They have a usage for him. What I'm more concerned about is they haven't figured out how Walker is going to help him in year three and four. And I think he should have been helping him in year two. And he did. The time he's been on the field, he has really helped. Mm-hmm. So it's a shame that he's not getting more activity. DeAndre Hopkins doesn't play special teams. Walker does. So that's another reason why, you know, you get some value out of that. It'd be also, you know, I thought by this time they'd also have figured out a little more about who Wester is in terms of trying to get him on the field.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to have to call it there. I'll look in the mailbag. I'll see if we have anything for this episode. I thought we maybe did. So just give me a moment here, if you would. We don't have any MVPs to discuss, but while we're waiting for this, Brandon, where can people contact you online if they want to talk football?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at BreeCroxton99. Love talking Ravens and Terps basketball starting up. I'm like basketball, like the O's as well.
All right. Okay, we do have one here. This is from Angelov85. Angelov, appreciate your many questions. Despite the good news regarding Keaton Mitchell, I still believe he sits. How will the Ravens compensate for his absence? We should limit QB runs. Also, is durability a concern since Keaton Mitchell is up for an extension after this season? We talked about that a little bit earlier. Should we extend him or draft a running back? Or is both really the correct answer?
I think both might be the correct answer. I don't. If you're talking about extending him for 2 or 3 years, I don't necessarily know if that's the right move. If you're talking about just making sure that you bring him back for next year, I think you definitely want to do that. And I still think you need to draft a running back in the mid rounds.
Okay, so I have some problems with mid round running back draft picks, especially day two running back draft picks. You're really committing to that player being outstanding. They did that with Justice Hill, and they didn't really actually. Justice Hill, I guess, was a four, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a fourth round.
Okay, so maybe not the hugest commitment, and I think they got value out of him, so you can justify that pick. And Dobbins as a two, Rice as a two. I think each of them, it didn't work out for Dobbins, but it did work out for Rice in terms of the value they got from the player. But it doesn't always when you draft a back in a higher round like that. So
sure.
I guess with Lamar, with the Ravens having that situation the way they like it, I'd rather pick a guy who is almost a distressed property of sorts and try and get him really late, save my draft capital for other positions because, oh boy, every position needs it this year.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe get two of such players, either UDFA, or if you want to claim the guy because you think there'll be UDFA competition for him, go ahead and take him in round 7. And then you're not worried, but I'm happy taking a property. You know, Denny Woodhead is probably a player that there was never any draft. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't actually remember where he's drafted, but he might have been a player there was no draft competition for. There's certainly been other backs in recent years. There's really been no particular draft competition for. And then the Ravens will go out and they'll try for a six on Tyler Beatty or somebody like that. You know, they're not as obvious. Raheem Mostert is a good one. There was no draft competition for him, I don't believe. And who was the guy? Smoke Mizell? Whichever the one.
I'm not sure.
The Bears. Yeah. Ravens had him in camp, and then he went to the Bears after cuts. He was picked up by them, but okay. Anyway, no need to go down that road. But he, there are multiple running backs that they've had. I just think you get such a Lamar boost, you know, lifts all boats value out of the extra running backs you have. Pick something that you want in terms of a characteristic that isn't central to why people would want to draft a running back. If you want a pass blocker, go ahead and draft a pass blocking running back. They will. I guarantee you, there's plenty of guys you can pick who are halfway decent receivers and good pass blockers who you can get undrafted. At the running back position. If you want a guy who has breakaway speed, but none of the pass blocking, that's kind of Keaton Mitchell is. He was undrafted.
Yeah.
Probably there'd be chances for that if you want that. And if you want a guy who's just a big bowling ball, I don't know where Cam Scadabo was drafted this year, but I don't think it was that high, right? And so.
Yeah. I think he was a mid round guy, like fourth or something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. So. Anyway, I hope they go after the running back position with draft economy being one of the things they're really looking at very seriously. That they need to avoid some of the wasted draft picks that they've had in recent years on guys that didn't have the best developmental prospects. And they obviously thought they did, but Caillou Blue Kelly, there wasn't a path for him to stay with the team. Mm-hmm. And you know, so that didn't really make sense. And Tyler Beatty was you know kind of a similar thing. Nick Samak, he's only a 7th round draft pick, but not that bad. I'm better with the Sanusi Kane pick even because at least you're getting the special teams you wanted out of him as a 7th round pick. Even though the any upside as a safety has not been realized.
Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think we'll have to call it there. Brandon, appreciate you coming on so much. And please tag Brandon into the conversation at bcroxon99. And I guarantee you get a great response when you add him, whatever the sport might be. Has experience with playing college football himself, played with Marquise Douglas. We used to usually say that almost once per show when we have you on, but I'm sure it was a great experience playing at Howard there. Other folks out there, please make use of hashtag film study mailbag. I'm trying to get questions that I can create into these videos. If you want to be on a short with me, hit me up. I'd love to hear from you and hear what your idea is. Brandon, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Kev.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.